Hi, everyone. I'm going to stick on the continent of Africa. We're going to zoom west. I think we're making a little triangle. I believe that Wendy will take us back down south after I'm done talking, but I hope everybody's comfortable in Africa right now. I'd like to talk a little bit about our program in Côte d'Ivoire, kind of taking it back to the very beginnings of a post-conflict setting and some of the specific challenges associated with working with the Ministry of Health in a post-conflict setting. So here we go. I have nothing to disclose. So here is Bouaké, Côte d'Ivoire, which is the setting for our tale here. Côte d'Ivoire is a country located in West Africa, just directly west of Ghana. It's got a population of about 20.6 million people. And Bouaké, if you look over at the map on the right there, is right in the middle of the country that's shaped kind of like a circle. Bouaké is the second largest town in Côte d'Ivoire with a population of about 775,000 people. I'm going to give you a very brief history that in no way should be... I feel really guilty giving such a brief history, but we don't have much time. So like many countries in West Africa, Côte d'Ivoire experienced a period of colonization by the French until the year 1960. They recently celebrated their 50th anniversary of independence, like a lot of countries in West Africa this summer. And I think that Abidjan is probably competing with a lot of other capitals in West Africa, calling itself the Paris of West Africa in the 70s and 80s. I've heard that in about a lot of cities, but people would like to call themselves Le Petit Paris there. In the 1970s and 80s, where there was a period of really great economic growth and development in the whole country, it was followed by a period of structural adjustment from the IMF that kind of degraded a lot of the government's capacity to continue developing, and it led up to a failed military coup in the year 1999. This was followed by a contested presidential election in 2000, which set the stage for a civil war that erupted in the country in 2002. Divided the country between the north and the south. The north was controlled by a rebel force, and the south was controlled by the government. There were two different administrations during this time, which lasted it's lasted up until the present day. There is no, like a lot of situations, it's hard to say that there is an end date to the war. A lot of folks in Bouaké will tell you that the war continues compared to their life previous to the violence. So a recent update, on Halloween there was elections. It wasn't necessarily Halloween in Côte d'Ivoire, but there's going to be a runoff election scheduled for November 21st, and this is the first election since before the war. It's been rescheduled 6 times, and a lot of folks think that this is the last obstacle before a lot of real development happens in the country if these elections can be concluded peacefully. So getting back to the conflict, I'm going to focus in on the effects in terms of the health sphere, because that's the focus of our organization's work. As you can see, this is a photo of some of the destruction of the health sites that happened, particularly in the north of the country. All of the health sites in the north were looted, destroyed. Healthcare workers fled the region to go to more stable regions in the south. Healthcare services were fragmented. It was very sporadic what services would be available in a site like this or in NGOs that kind of cropped up to fill the void of services. And finally, HIV care was deliberately decentralized to NGO delivery. I think there was a fledgling HIV program in the government before the war started, and all services were interrupted due to the violence and due to the lack of human resources to be able to continue that work. After the war, there were about 500 NGOs that began specifically in the area of HIV services, and we'll have a photo of that in a little bit. This is a graph of the healthcare worker populations in the three districts of Bouaké. You can see that all three cadres, doctors, nurses, and midwives, particularly nurses, really declined rapidly after the war. They all moved south. There's been a steady rise in healthcare worker populations since, but it still hasn't reached the pre-war levels, and it certainly hasn't reached the levels recommended by the WHO. This is a really lovely corner in Bouaké, talking about some of the NGOs. Some of these signs are Western Union and hotels and things, but most of them are NGOs. So it's just a way to show you that you can really get tangled up in the NGOs in Bouaké, as did many pregnant women, and that's where we're going to go to next. So what we wanted to do is look at, we were looking at PMTCT specifically. I think this is a really easy area to begin integrating HIV services into the public sector. A lot of women attend antenatal care services. They always have in Bouaké, and they continue to even throughout the war, even with few healthcare workers available to perform these services. Women are always going to get pregnant, and they're always going to need care. So we were looking at ways to begin integrating HIV services into the public sector, working with the Ministry of Health of Côte d'Ivoire. And this study particularly, what we wanted to provide baseline information for program development within the public health sector. And also knowing that we were still in a post-conflict situation in 2007, the country had not yet completely reunified, we wanted to suggest strategies to implement integrated PMTCT services into the public health sector. These are just some of the objectives. We wanted to describe the existing services that were available. We really wanted to look at the referral and follow-up systems of these women. We had a hunch that not many of them were able to navigate the system, given how fragmented it was, and so we wanted to display that visually to be able to use this information as kind of a tool for policy change within the Ministry of Health. And finally, we wanted to describe patient flow through the health system from the perspective of a pregnant woman who is seeking comprehensive antenatal care and HIV testing and care services. It's pretty normal methodology. We would talk to a lot of people, and this was building relationships as well for our program implementation a little later on. Talk to a lot of healthcare workers, district health managers, NGOs that were available in the area. We did some record reviews of registries, and though we got to see a lot of registries in the public health sector, the NGOs were not quite so willing to share their data. I think that this is a very typical scene where there are a lot of donors, there are a lot of donors who want a lot of data, and there are a lot of NGOs who want a lot of money. So that was a little harder. We weren't able to get good data from the NGOs, but we were able to examine the MOH registries. And finally, we drew a patient flow map through the system. And what we're going to talk about next is kind of some of these patient flow analyses that we created. There were three of them particularly, one of an HIV-negative pregnant woman seeking antenatal care services, an HIV-positive pregnant woman not eligible for treatment. Her CD4 count would be high enough that she wouldn't need her treatment for her own HIV. Disease, and finally an HIV-positive pregnant woman eligible for treatment and seeking follow-up services. So this is the global map of the patient flow system, and I'm going to talk about this with a specific patient flow analysis to kind of walk us through. Things to note is, of course, the pregnant woman is located in the middle. Each of the circles around her are different facilities that are available in Bouaké, and their services are listed within the little circles. And each of the arrows represents a referral with a service. So, like I said, we'll walk through kind of the grand prize in just a second here. So we're going to look at the HIV-positive pregnant woman eligible for treatment and seeking follow-up services in Bouaké in 2007 in this post-conflict setting. Here we go. I think that this is a really powerful tool because it shows not only the cascade effect that we saw before, but also physically what it took a woman to do, that she would have to do to get through this system. It's kind of a nightmare, if you can see. We can just walk through it really quickly. She'll first go to the CSU, that's a public health facility that has antenatal care. Where sometimes she would receive counseling for HIV. If she decided that this was an important thing for her, she really wanted to get tested, she would be referred to another NGO. So she would go all the way across town to go to another NGO that provided counseling and testing services. It's important to note that each arrow is a referral, and each arrow represents a pretty powerful chance for a loss to follow up. It takes time and money and resources to get to all of these places, not to mention the emotional effect of thinking about getting tested for HIV. It's really scary to some people. So she heads across town to the NGO. She's tested for HIV. But at the time, HIV testing was not on site. They sent a blood sample away to a lab to get analyzed. It would take a few days. Sometimes it would take a few weeks. They would tell the women to go home, to come back in 3 or 4 days or a week. Sometimes she came back, sometimes she didn't. But sometimes she came back to the NGO there. She got her results. Unfortunately, she's HIV positive. She needs a CD4 count. Analysis done. and it's not available at the original NGO. She's sent to another NGO where there's one CD4 machine in the entire town of Bouake. So a lot of times it was backed up. It was broken a lot of times as well. So she may or may not be able to get that test done at the same time that she goes to this other facility. If she does, she's sent home, because after she gets her blood test done, it's going to take a little while to get through the system, especially if there's a backup. She goes back to the NGO to get her results. Unfortunately, her CD4 count is low enough that she needs ARVs for herself. So sometimes they're available at the same facility with a CD4 count. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes she's referred to a pharmacy with ARVs at the time. During the entire history of HIV services in Côte d'Ivoire, treatment, all these services are free for pregnant women, including treatment. So she goes to the pharmacy, she gets her ARVs. She's referred to another NGO for psychosocial support services and nutritional support services. And this is really important for a lot of the women in Bouake at the time and to this day to get those psychosocial support services. There are support groups that are set up of HIV-positive women, and it's really proven vital to their continuance of treatment throughout their HIV status. So she goes to this other NGO for nutritional support. She gets some free rations. She's still pregnant. She's going to have a baby. So she can't get any delivery care at any of these NGOs. She's got to go back to the first place she went to, the public health facility, to get prenatal care, her continuance of prenatal care services and delivery care. So grand total here, we had 8 visits to at least 5 sites. The time frame for this was a week, which I think is a pretty best case scenario, to a month or more, depending on whether or not these services or these machines are working. And it was a total nightmare. So just to talk about this a little bit, this crazy system was set up because of a fragmentation of care. In general, the public system provided ANC services and delivery care, and NGOs were providing the HIV care at the time. Causes for this, of course, it's a post-conflict setting. We saw the pictures of the destroyed health centers. People lost confidence in the public health system, but they also just didn't have the services or the human resources capacity to be able to deliver these HIV services. There was the NGO proliferation and competition that I spoke of a little bit. And caused this loss to follow-up, which is really unknown. As I was saying about those NGOs who really were the only facilities that had any idea of how many women were getting tested, what their status was in terms of their CD4 count, they weren't sharing that data. They weren't sharing with each other, and they weren't sharing with the public health system. So there was no way to even know what the loss to follow-up rate was. Healthcare workers anecdotally said that it was about 20% of the women returned for their results of their HIV tests. And the causes of this, of course, is this crazy referral system. There's a lot of stigma, and just the cost. It costs a lot of time and money to get through that system. So we use this, this patient flow analysis to really try to advocate for some policy and practice change within the public health system, talking about integration of PMTCT in antenatal care, using the on-site testing, and with the debut of rapid tests that were beginning to be available in the region as well. It really helped to cut this loss to follow-up rate. We advocated for better collaboration between the Ministry of Health and NGOs. There are now monthly meetings that are set up to share best practices to kind of get rid of some of these effects of these data wars. It's not perfect. It's far from it. I don't believe that there is full disclosure of all the information yet, but it's getting better. And finally, we kind of use PMTCT as an entry point to start thinking about integrated HIV care in all points of entry at the public health sites, including TB screenings, nutritional interventions, and identifying orphans and vulnerable children that are affected by HIV. So today I can say that there's integrated PMTCT and actually HIV services in all the Bouake public health facilities. We did this through a lot of on-site coaching and training, support to the district managers, setting up this CD4 transport system so that way the women don't have to go from facility to facility anymore. They can just go to one facility to get all of their test results from their analyses. And finally, just I can't emphasize enough the importance of working with the district management in increasing leadership and management skills, the use of routine data, really getting the Ministry of Health involved in creating ownership of this system. This is not an NGO activity. This is an activity that's owned by the Ministry of Health. Finally, this is what our patient flow looks like today. A woman can go to the public health facility and get all of those different services that are available. I left the other arrows on there because there are still NGOs that are available in Mbwake, and they do provide vital services, and women do access those services, but they now have the choice that if they just want to go to one, they can. So thank you very much.